Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. We aren't called the City of Fountains for nothing. Even today, some think only the City of Rome has more fountains than we do. The count here in town numbers in the hundreds, but exact numbers are hard to find. Today, we'll get an update on the state of our fountains and why Kansas City got hooked on fountains to begin with. We'll also talk about why they need so much maintenance. And here's a hint, water can cause a whole lot of damage. We'll also hear about the Kansas City Symphony's upcoming Ode to Our Fountains and a new play at the Rep, The Whipping Man. But first up, though, those fountains. With us today, Paul Benson is Associate Conservator of Objects at the Nelson Atkins, and he works to preserve and maintain the many fountains that dot our city. Paul, good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you. Also with us is Anne McFerrin. She's an archivist with the city's Parks and Rec Department. Anne, nice to have you, too.
Thank you very much.
Well, Paul, you work at the Nelson Atkins, so how are you also involved with the upkeep of all of our fountains?
Well, I also do private conservation work on the side, apart from the work at the museum, for some of the homeowners associations, some of the smaller towns around here. And they, apart from statuary, they also have fountains. So that's how I got involved with this.
Do you do work for the city of Kansas City, Missouri, too?
I do on and off. Do for the city, for the county. For Mission Hills is one of my clients, and there's several fountains in Mission Hills. So really, it's, and private people also have fountains in their backyards or their basements, wherever. So just wherever a fountain happens to be, I'll work on it.
So what's the most common problem people have with fountains, even in their own backyards?
Algae.
Ah.
Yes, so organic growths, that is the main problem, just trying to control that. You'll find that even though everything else is imperfect, looking perfectly good, everything is working fine, it can just be very ugly from all the green or black growths on the fountains.
How do you deal with it?
Well, you just have to turn them off, clean it, recommend that they do some kind of a program with their water quality. There are companies around town that specialize in water quality for fountains with various chemicals or other means of doing it. Sometimes they may have an ultraviolet light installed in the water to help kill some of the bacteria. But that's the end of it I don't get involved with. I think that's somebody else's expertise.
But I gather right now, Paul, this is fountain fixing time, right? Are you getting out and about, getting ready for the opening of the season again?
Yes, we are. There are several things that, say, particularly in Mission Hills, we do try to take care of all the fountains before winter time. They cover most of their fountains in the winter. So we get in there and clean them before they're covered. So when the covers come off, they're all set to go. But there are other ones that, say, we just can't get to that do need work before then the season starts.
Yeah. Well, Anne McFerrin, maybe you can solve a mystery for us. How many fountains do we have around here? Because numbers are all over the place.
Well, best guess is around 200, possibly a bit more. That, of course, that doesn't
these
really—
are, these are public fountains we're talking about when you say 200,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, public can mean Parks and Recreation, City of Kansas City, also smaller fountains that are easily accessible to people, like Crown Center, the fountain, waterfall fountain inside.
How did we get to be a city of fountains to begin with?
Well, it's just kind of the love of beauty, I think, in a way. When the Parks Department started, a couple of the earliest fixtures that were put in were fountains. First one, about 1899, it was the 15th Street Fountain at 15th and Paseo.
That's our first one, really, isn't
it? Yeah, first city placed fountain. And not long after that, then one was placed at 9th Street in the Paseo, and that one is still in existence. The 15th Street Fountain was taken out about 1942.
Why was it taken out?
It always had problems from the very beginning. It was designed by George Kessler and John Van Brunt, but basically George Kessler's idea based on the Versailles Fountain, and it had five tiers, very tall. They turned it on, and it immediately started kind of leaking. Then when they got things fixed, it would blow water all over everybody who would drive by because it was a very big fountain with water coming out and the wind would blow. Grover Cleveland was here for a parade in Theodore Roosevelt when they were presidents. And so as the Theodore Roosevelt parade was going down the Paseo, they were all being blown by water. So they turned it off for a while. And
you want to get your presidents wet, do you?
No. Yeah. Anyway, they turned it off for a while and took off some of the layers so that it ended up only being about three high, three smaller ones. And that was better, but they still had problems with it all along. George Kessler was a very good landscape architect, but and he had engineering training, but just the fountain never quite worked. So they took it out and made it a flower bed at one point, but now it's near where I-70 goes over at the Paseo.
Well, is there a sense we have lots of fountains here, Anne, because we're just so darn far away from the oceans and we need to have some sort of water element here to make life a little more interesting?
Well, I guess that could be one theory.
Yeah.
Because people do like water. And running water has a very soothing effect on a lot of people. Plus, many times they are combined with decorative elements, be it statuary or now lights and various forms of the way the water goes.
Well, as the two of you get around town, the entire metro area, what shape are our fountains in these days? Paul, as you look around, what do you see?
I think basically they're in pretty good shape. Not all of them are working all the time, but they are raising funds for the ones which aren't working. The ones which are working seem to be working fine. There's been a lot of work put into them over the years. So I would say in general they're in pretty good shape.
Do they tend to be more complicated mechanisms than most people sort of are aware of?
Yes. What most people see is just what's above ground, but there is a lot of underground also, a lot of piping. The lights, the electrical, a lot of things which can go wrong. And any time you have water, water is very corrosive to metal, corrosive to stone, and it's going to find its way into everything. So it's a major problem, the part that's underground.
And what's your sense of what kind of shape the fountains are in these days?
We try to keep up on them. Of course, with budgetary cuts, it makes it very hard because it's expensive to do. But the parks really tries to keep them up if at all possible and tries to address problems as they come up.
What percentage of our public fountains would you just guess are operating these days, and which ones are lying dormant because perhaps the money's not there to keep up with the upkeep?
Well, I'm not involved on that end. I'm more involved with the history part of it, but most of them are working, I'd say. And then, as I say, as work is needed and comes up, then we try to take care of them. But then, of course, there are a lot of other fountains beside city fountains as well, too.
Well, if our listeners want to chime in with their questions about fountains or perhaps offer their recommendation for their favorite city fountain, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. You know, the J.C. Nichols Fountain at the east entrance to the plaza, that seems to be the one that everyone knows. What a magnificent fountain I think that one is. What kind of shape is that one in? Any sense of where we stand with that, Ann?
Well, I know they've been working on it recently, and as people might have seen about a year ago, one of the original pieces that had been replaced when the fountain was first put in 1960, was found in Florida, and we've acquired that, and that will be
in
placed
Florida,
back.
In Florida? What was it doing down there?
Well, the fountain originally was placed at the Clarence Mackey Estate in Long Island, and it was done by Henri Grobert, I think in 1910. When they broke up the estate, then pieces were sold, and Miller Nichols bought most of the pieces, but some had disappeared. And this was one of them.
What piece was found in Florida?
It's a boy on a dolphin, boy on a fish.
No kidding.
And so it's very exciting that we had it. And when they did place the fountain as the tribute to J.C. Nichols, they did replace the pieces in a very good way because they just didn't have them. But they will be putting the original piece back in when they get things kind of cleaned up and fixed up.
Well, just by chance, I mean, how did someone in Florida who found this piece have any notion that this boy on a dolphin belonged to the fountain up in the middle of the country in Kansas City?
Well, to be honest, I'm not really positive about that. But they did contact the department, and the lady who is in charge of the fountains took it in hand, and we followed up with it. And it's really a neat thing. And not all money to acquire it was by the city, but it was also private donations, too.
Well, Paul, as fountains go, how does the J.C. Nichols Fountain rank in your view? How grand of a fountain is it in your view?
It's a very grand fountain. And I think it's one of the things that people see when it's on is a little different from when it's off in the wintertime. If you go out there and look at it now, it looks like the surface is mottled. There may be some staining on it.
Yeah.
But once the water is on, the water saturates the surface and it looks absolutely beautiful, which does bring a problem with this new piece which has been found. the patina on it is different from what's on the fountain right now. So when it goes back out, they're going to have to find a way to match them so that it doesn't look like it's a replacement, so it does look like it's part of the original sculpture.
And how do you do that?
Well, you're just going to have to change the surface somehow on it. Right now, it has a very bright green look about it. That's the original piece.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody will have to come in there and repatinate it to try and match the darker colors that are on the fountain right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, during the course of a typical year, how much damage does water do to a fountain like the J.C. Nichols fountain?
A lot. Most of the fountains, the metal ones, most of the fountains are bronze. They have a coating on them of some type. It could be either an acrylic coating or a wax coating. And the fountains that are waxed, that wax has to be replaced annually, sometimes twice a year, depending on what's the quality of the water. The acrylic coating offers a very good protection, but we usually put a coat of wax on top of that to act as a sacrificial layer.
Yeah.
And it really depends on where the fountain's located, how much wear and tear it gets, how easy it is to apply this material, and because a lot of times this acrylic coating will have to be taken off eventually. And if you look at, say, at the Muse of Missouri, that's very high. It's very intricate. Having to use chemicals on that to remove that coating and reapply it is very difficult and time-consuming.
Does care of that fountain occupy the Parks and Rec Department every year, Anne?
Is that Yes, most definitely. You have to address something just about all the time in some way or another, as either an active project or something planned for the future.
You know, most folks who look at that fountain will realize there are four horses that surround that particular fountain. What do those horses represent?
Well, it was always kind of a theory. Nothing really was presented as fact, but possibly rivers.
Yeah, the great
Seine
rivers
River,
of the world.
The Rhone, and some of the other great rivers of the world.
Mm-hmm. But we don't know for sure, though.
Not for sure, no.
Okay. Again, if you want to make a recommendation for your favorite fountain in the city of fountains, 816-235-2888, our email address, updates@kcur.org. How big a problem is vandalism to these fountains, Anne? Because I know over the years, even the J.C. Nichols fountain has been hit with problems.
Oh, yes. It's a very serious problem because the little money that the vandals get either by taking things or damaging something costs a tremendous amount of money to fix.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sad situation because the vast majority of people love the fountains, enjoy them, respect them very much, and you get a few people in here. And vandalism's, of course, gone on for thousands of years, but you get a few people in there that do the damage, and it's very sad because it makes people unhappy if they can't have their fountains.
Well, they're pretty exposed, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's no one's guarding these things
exactly.
At night. Yeah.
And it's difficult. If you have a water going on full force, it's difficult for somebody to do something, but especially like in the wintertime or when something isn't going on, it's easier to hurt them.
How much does vandalism get you involved in coming out trying to repair things and get things back to the way they were, Paul?
Actually, it's not that much from my standpoint. If you look at the ones in Mission Hills, they very rarely ever have any problems with the vandalism there. But I think you'd have to consider the difference between, say, a metal fountain, say, the bronze fountains and the stone fountains. When you do damage to a stone fountain, a lot of times that stone will just crumble away. It's not just a big chunk laying on the ground. And then it cannot be replaced. It has to be recarved. It has to be redone somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to find people with the skills to do that, that's not easy to do these days.
Hmm. Amy from Kansas City, Missouri writes us at updates@kcur.org. She says she likes the Meyer Circle fountain better than the J.C. Nichols fountain.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, Anne?
Well, they're both absolutely lovely.
Visitors
coming to Kansas City, those are probably the two most prominent fountains that people feature. Part of the thing about the Meyer Circle Fountain, or the Seahorse Fountain, as it's known, is the fact that you're driving down a beautiful roadway, and it's right in the center.
Yeah.
And at one point, they were talking about doing something drastic as far as taking things out because over the years there have been accidents caused by people driving right around the circle if they take it too fast. But
do they drive right into the fountain?
Well, no, but they've driven into some of the walls around the houses near there.
Yeah.
But several years ago they lessened the turn of the circle,
mm-hmm.
and there's been much less of that. Yeah. That really helped out a lot, and the fountain can still be enjoyed. But it's spectacular driving down Meyer Boulevard going west and then just see the fountain in front of you. Well, it's beautiful.
It strikes me the problem with that fountain is you're so busy driving, you don't have really a chance to enjoy it.
Right.
Unlike the J.C. Nichols fountain where you can sort of get out of your car and walk up and really sort of take it in a little bit, you know.
But that's why the approach from Meyer is really kind of nice because you have to go pretty much right at that point where if you're driving on Ward Parkway, you can't really enjoy it as well.
Paul, do you have a favorite fountain yourself between the two of the ones we're talking about here?
I still like the J.C. Nichols fountain. I think it's very classic. It's spectacular. Yeah. To me, it's just what a fountain should be.
Yeah. I should point out that Paul Benson, again, Associate Conservator of Objects at the Nelson Atkins, will talk about his work on those fountains, their histories, and their many pleasures in City of Fountains Underneath the Water and Sculpture at 6:30 Thursday evening at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. That's at 4801 Main Street. You can RSVP online by going to kcur.org and clicking on Up to Date, or call 816-701-3407 just to reserve a seat. Again, 816-701-3407. You know, I read, Anne, that in the 19th century, Kansas City's first fountains were erected over springs to provide clean drinking water for humans and animals. Does that sound right?
Well, partially, yeah. That was a very popular way of having the fountain go. I mean, that's been very, let's say, workable. Mm-hmm. For many centuries, people wanting a drink of water and then also having the working animals. Mm-hmm. A problem arose with those is that sometimes the water became stagnant and there was a great gladders or fodders or something, so that a number of horses died. And a special fountain was designed in the early 20th century that ended up being helpful so that water would flow through the fountain, and it could be used with springs or an actual water connection with it so that the water would not be sitting there all the time. And that really helped out a lot with the horses. Plus, they would put a little trough oftentimes at the bottom for dogs.
Yeah,
and other animals.
Of course, that's still a problem today because you have a lot of people who like to play in the fountains. The people walking their dogs, the dogs will come up for a drink of water out of the fountains. So it does limit you to how you can treat that water in the fountains if you want to keep the organic growths down. Now, you don't want to make it poisonous to people and animals.
I was going to say, how dangerous is it for folks to walk through that water?
I don't think it's that dangerous now. I think they have that pretty well under control. Most of the chemicals they put in there are a very, very low concentration, just enough to keep the organic growths down. So I don't think I would worry about playing in it. Some of them, I don't think I would drink in them at certain times of the year, maybe the height of the summertime. That may not be a very good idea.
Yeah, you think twice about
that
then. Max writes us, there are some very old fountains at the zoo that are among his favorites. Do we know about those, the ones at the zoo?
I'm not real well acquainted with some of the ones. They do have one that was dedicated to I'll look up.
Look it up. Paul, yeah. Paul, do you know those fountains at the zoo?
There is a drinking fountain there that that was moved fairly recently in the last few years. Used to be right by the sea lion enclosure. That's been moved. That's one of the oldest drinking fountains. It's not exactly a fountain, but it's a drinking fountain. But that's the only one I'm really familiar with at all.
Yeah. Well, your recommendations for your favorite fountain, give us a shout, 816-235-2888. Our email address, again, update@kcur.org. Paul, I gather that when you get involved in fixing these fountains that you have to coordinate your work with whatever city you're working on so that whatever work is done is sort of mixing and matching with what crews are doing underneath the fountain to make sure the whole thing is running right.
Yes, that's right. Fountains may have to be drained, certainly shut off, and maybe drained altogether if you have to get a ladder up to them. There are other fountains that there's a particular one at Edgevale, 69th Warnell in that area that was the Homeowners Association in that neighborhood decided to restore the fountain, but the fountain was made of travertine. It had been in there since 1925, and of course it had weathered away very badly, so that it was hardly recognizable anymore. Well, they did something fairly radical. They actually hired two local artists to recreate that part of the fountain, that sculptural element, in bronze. And so now what used to be a stone sculptural element in the middle of the fountain is now bronze, but they preserved the original piece, and it's in the little traffic triangle over in the corner. So you can compare what it is, what it looks like now, to the bronze piece that is what it probably looked like originally.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very interesting idea.
And it all worked out okay.
Yes, it did. Say the artist took some old photographs and say that everything was fine.
Yeah, okay. And you mentioned that 1904 outbreak of disease. I also note that some of the statuary in Kansas City is over 300 years old.
Yes, a lot of that has to do, thanks to J.C. Nichols, that he believed in making not only commercial areas but also residential areas pleasant places for people to live.
Mm-hmm.
And he put a lot of statuary and fountains in the different areas. I live in the Armor Hills area, and at 69th around Edgevale on Brookside Road, there's a fountain there, and then right across the street is the fountain that Paul was just talking about, the Rovinelli fountain.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be small fountains, small statuary, but it was he believed that if he made the areas nice and attractive, people would take better care of it and take a real pride in their neighborhoods.
I was also struck there's actually a City of Fountains Foundation that was created back in 1974 designed to actually keep the fountains operating and well-funded.
Harold Rice and his wife, yes.
Yeah. What happened there?
It's still in existence, and they have a website if people want to go to it. Just like type in City of Fountains Foundation, and they can also give money to help support some of the fountains in Kansas City because private donations are extremely helpful in doing that.
Hmm. And how active, how vibrant is that group today?
Well, it's still in existence, and I'm not really involved. I have done some research for them on some of the fountains that they have, but I'm not really actively involved with the group other than that.
I also noticed that the Northland Fountain, which is located where? The big one in the Northland. It flows year-round and forms a winter ice sculpture that changes with the weather.
Yeah, there are just very few fountains that are kept on all year round, and that is one of them.
And where's that located?
It's on Vivian Road in North Kansas City North, Gorman Park area.
Hey, it's just interesting to me that clearly the whole ethic, this whole notion of fountains has sort of caught on, and people have them. Our smaller cities have them. Private homes have them. Mm-hmm. It really seems to be even more so than most other towns our size. Am I seeing that correctly?
Yes. People find fountains to be very soothing. We even helped move a very large bronze fountain into somebody's basement a few years ago.
Somebody's basement?
Into a basement, yes. It was quite a feat, actually, getting it into the basement. When they got down there and turned it on, they found that it made too much noise. So when it was on outside, the sound dissipated, but inside in a little enclosed environment like a basement, it was too much noise. So we tried to find a way to actually make it a little less noisy, and we did find a way to tone it down a little bit, but eventually I think they just turned it off, and now it's just a sculpture instead of a fountain.
In the basement
in
of
the
some
basement.
Big house.
Yes.
Well, why not, right?
Why not?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, Kansas City is known for its parks, boulevards, and fountains.
Yeah.
Basically, again, you bring a visitor to Kansas City, you drive them down Ward Parkway, you take them around, you show them the different fountains, and it gives a certain pride. I've heard many comments from people coming to Kansas City, who've never been here before, saying what a beautiful city we have.
Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls here. Michael from Kansas City, Missouri. Michael, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hello. I'll be very brief. I really like your show.
Thank you.
The St. Martin statue that's at the south end of the Nelson Art Gallery.
Yeah.
Do you remember that from the 60s where the fountain, you could walk right there and there was these squares of water, and now it's moved right next to the road, just keep going south. Are you familiar with the statues I'm talking about?
Yeah, that's the Volcker Fountain, dedicated to William Volcker, 1958.
The Swedish or the Scandinavian.
Right, Carl Millis. That was Carl Millis's last major work before he died.
Yes, and he actually placed it there specifically, and now...
I know.
Oh, it's horrible. Is there any chance of getting that moved back the way it should be? You know, because all this traffic whizzing by it, that's not enjoyable.
They redid... Volcker or Tice Mall, which is where the Volcker Fountain was placed, when they started working on the amphitheater and also kind of reworking with Brush Creek because of some of the flooding in 1977.
Yeah.
And they moved the fountain in the 1990s.
The fountain didn't get flooded, did it?
No, but the area did. Brush Creek had the flooding in the plaza and then further east. Mm-hmm. And so they needed to do something with the creek. Of course, you know the plaza where they've redone all that replaced the bridges there. So that was kind of part of that project.
Mm-hmm. That was the biggest surprise when I came back to Kansas City after mm-hmm. about 18 mm-hmm. years to mm-hmm. See all the change in Brush Creek.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Right. Well, that was partially because of that 1977 flood.
Anyway, it'd be nice if the sculpture could be resituated again in that same type of setting, you know.
Thank you very much for your comment. I really appreciate that.
Oh, it's just a side note here. It grew up in the 33rd and Wyandotte, but the Armor and Wyandotte, there used to be a beautiful horse tie there. And this, you know, since 53, and this was, it was a stone masonry type thing, and I came back, and it's gone. You know, horse ring and stuff. It's gone. There's a sidewalk's all caved in. It's just, I'm going, did somebody save it, or did they just bust it up?
Mm.
People should be so much more aware historical value of things in the city. I mean, it's wonderful. That one book, Lost Kansas City, was, that just makes me my blood boil when I read some of the underhanded things. But I don't know. Anyway,
well, Michael,
enjoy
thank
your
you.
Show, and I'll keep listening.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, I should point out Kansas City actually has a fountain day. It'll be Tuesday, April 10th. The official celebration will be held at the Marlboro Plaza Fountain at Paseo and 79th Street at 11 o'clock that morning. Was there any thought to moving the date up earlier this year, given how nice the weather is?
Oh, no. They place it quite a way back. And, of course, you can't tell at the time what the weather's going to be like. So they set the date several months in advance. And an interesting thing about the fountain at 79th and Paseo that they're going to be dedicating, it was the first fountain on the plaza.
Oh.
Originally.
Really?
It's where the Seville Fountain is today.
Yeah.
And they moved it in 68 when they put the Seville Fountain in. And it doesn't look exactly the way it did when it was on the plaza. They had a figure of a boy and a fish on top.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of been lost somewhere along the way.
Yeah.
But the basic bowls, basins of the fountain are the original fountain.
Huh. I want to bring Frank Byrne into our conversation. He's executive director of the Kansas City Symphony, and he's here to talk with us about the Symphony's City of Fountains celebration this weekend. Frank, always good to have you. Good morning.
Thanks, Steve.
You're still recovering from Joyce DiDonato having been here, I'm sure.
It was incredible.
Yeah, it was. She's something, isn't she?
It was an amazing weekend for us, and the fact that it was filmed for national broadcast on PBS will show what we have here in Kansas City to the nation. In July.
And when's that going to be exactly, Frank?
July 20th.
On PBS, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a neat deal coming up this weekend, what the Symphony is doing. Tell us a little bit about it, Frank.
It's part of a year-long celebration of Kansas City as the City of Fountains. When Michael and I planned this season, we thought about our move into Hillsburg Hall and what it was going to mean for the city, and we decided to celebrate part of the city's heritage by commissioning three works of music that were inspired by fountains. Now, in 1913, Italian composer Ottorino Respighi wrote a piece called The Fountains of Rome, inspired by four fountains there, and I thought, why can't we do that?
Hmm.
And so we did. And on our opening weekend, we played a work by Kansas City's own Chen Yi,
mm-hmm.
Called The Fountains of KC, which not only celebrates all the fountains in Kansas City, but it also, she said that the KC not only stands for Kansas City, but also for Kauffman Center. So we started with that one.
That's a nice coincidence.
And we are ending our season with a commission work by Stephen Hartke, which he's called The Muse of the Missouri, after the fountain of the same name.
Mm-hmm.
And this weekend, we have a work by composer Daniel Kellogg called Water Music. Earlier in the year, Dan and I went around the city and we visited a number of different fountains and took pictures and videos and took them in. And he did research and he decided that this would celebrate all of Kansas City's fountains. So this is the second in our season-long celebration.
Well, which fountains did he react to the most, Frank? Can you recall any?
I do. He was taken with the one that I call the J.C. Nichols Fountain, the one there at the plaza.
Yeah. And how can you not be, right? Yeah.
The one down on Meyer Boulevard, that one that where the circle is
right
there, he loved that one. And we, I think we went to probably about six or eight fountains. But I think it was the idea of fountains and the threshold of activity, fountain activity here in Kansas City that took him by surprise. So I think it was more a celebration of all fountains everywhere.
Yeah. Can you describe what Chen Yi did with her music to sort of how she made fountains come alive in her music?
She tried to use effects in the orchestra in different instrumental patterns that she wrote that would sound like water shooting into the air, that would, you know, capture in your imagination what it might be like if a very intricate fountain like the Block Fountain down at Union Station, one that we also looked at, that when the water comes up in very propulsive movements and it's very choreographed, it's both graceful and very sudden. And so there were all sorts of instrumental effects that were meant to be drops of water and some that were meant to be big cascades of water. And it was very entertaining. I enjoyed it.
Obviously, Frank, water has been a big theme in a lot of orchestral music over the centuries. That's no surprise, right?
Right, right.
And the connection there is what?
Well, I think that different composers are simply inspired, in some cases by nature, some of the water that we talk about, whether it's the Blue Danube waltz or the Moldau by Smetana is talking about, you know, bodies of water and rivers. But then, you know, we have a piece by Claude Debussy called La Mer that's about the sea, mm-hmm. and, you know, the huge expanse of water, and then you could go on and on. But the idea of fountains where we have this terrestrial edifice that captures water and displays it in different ways. The fact that Respighi had done this so successfully made me think that, you know, Kansas City deserved its own version of this, and so now we have it.
Hmm. Well, I should point out Daniel Kellogg's water music will premiere what this weekend, the 30th, 31st, and April 1st in Helzberg Hall at the Kauffman Center, right?
Yes, and I also want all your listeners to know that on Saturday the 31st at 11 a.m., we're having another one of our Inside Music Series events where Dan Kellogg will be on the stage of Helzberg Hall with Michael Stern, and we'll be talking about his music. Two of our musicians will play a piece of chamber music that Dan wrote called Conversations for two clarinets, and he will talk about how he wrote this piece and play some excerpts of his other music, and that's at 11 o'clock. It's free in Helzberg Hall, and you can get information on our website at kcsymphony.org.
And I think you can get a preview of that performance on Thursday evening when Paul Benson speaks at the library, right? Because Michael Stern is going to perform with two clarinetists that evening as well. Again, 6:30 Thursday at the Plaza Branch, 4801 Main. To RSVP, call 816-701-3407. I got all that down right, Frank?
Yes, sir.
All right. Frank Byrne, always a pleasure to have you. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
That's Frank Byrne, Executive Director of the Kansas City Symphony. I also want to thank Paul Benson and Ann McFerrin. Paul Benson with the Nelson Atkins, Ann McFerrin, an archivist with the city's Parks and Rec Department. Thank you both for enlightening us about the city's fountains.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay. Thank you.
Time for a break. Coming up, we'll turn to the Kansas City Rep and its latest production of The Whipping Man. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR.